Romans chapter 1, verse 17, sorry, verse 16. For I am not ashamed of this good news about Christ. It is the power of God at work, saving everyone who believes. The Jew first, and also the Gentile. This good news tells us how God makes us right in his sight. This is accomplished from start to finish by faith. As the scriptures say, it is through faith that a righteous person has life. And then we'll look at 1 Corinthians in just a moment. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke, and I asked, sort of posed a question. I said, imagine if becoming a Christian, being saved, being put right with God, was so easy that all you actually had to do was believe, that there was, you didn't, that there were no other requirements for salvation other than believing what God had done through Jesus. And of course, the truth is that is all that's required. Anything else that is added to that reduces the gospel. Perhaps let me give you something to think about here. Grace, I think we were talking about this the other Monday night, grace is not the power to keep the law. Grace is not the power to keep the law, because even if grace was the power to keep the law, you'd still be lost. Because no one is put right with God by keeping the law. I'll run that again. It's a little bit cryptic, but then we'll perhaps move on to something a bit lighter. If grace was simply the power to keep the law, you still wouldn't be saved. Because no one is put right with God by keeping the law. Does that make sense? And when I talk to some Christians, I really feel that legalism, and they're putting burdens on themselves and burdens on other people that we are not called to carry, that detract from the gospel. You know, what, as I read it today, I think it was Max Licardo, he said that the grace, it's the power, a part of it is it's the power that gives us the desire to do right. We want to go beyond any legal requirements, but it's not just about keeping the law. That would not be enough. Even if we could keep it, it wouldn't be enough. No one is put right with God by keeping the law. So it's from faith. I'm put right with God by faith. I am made holy by, my horrible behavior is sorted out by faith. Absolutely. We've been debating this one for a few months, I'm telling you, and it's by faith. There's no other way. I can't do it. You can't do it. It's only God working in us. And what I wanted to touch on tonight is that our evangelism, seeing people born again, is by faith. It is truly by trusting God. And I would suggest that most of us, and that's us here and the wider church in this country, we don't have a lot of faith for people to be saved. Now, what evidence? How could I say so? Something so horrible as that? Well, could it be that it's because there aren't many people seeing their lives turned around? And so what I hope to do tonight, and I don't want to keep you too long or waffle on, is if I can just sort of light the touch paper or just give it a bit of stir, that I believe that the Lord wants to take us to well, I know he does, as the Bible says, we go from faith to faith, is that rather than thinking about what mechanism, what solution, what formula can we bring to see people come to know Jesus, we don't. We learn to believe. We're in the meeting this morning. It was very strange because Neil and Sally decided we were all going to have a cooked breakfast, so we turned up to bacon and sausages and the rest of it. So we sat around, stuffed our faces, and talked about Jesus. Doesn't get much better than that, really, does it? And we were talking about this, you know, evangelism is a faith thing. And Wendy was sharing just something that happened to her. And I just say this to encourage you. She was meeting up with some old school friends, hadn't seen them for 20 years. Unbeknownst to her, one of them had become a Christian as well. And she had it in her mind that she was going to somehow tell this girl about Jesus, not knowing that she'd already become saved. And so they got talking, and she managed to share some things, but it never really connected. The girl was too slow or whatever, I don't know. She didn't bite. But she shared some stuff, and just trust God, didn't go how I wanted. A couple of weeks later, she gets a phone call from one of the other friends saying, "Oh, I just wanted to call you and tell you, I've just given my life to Jesus. And it's wonderful." And we're, "Oh, that's brilliant. Wow, great, what happened?" "Well, it was you." "What do you mean it was me?" "So, well, you know, when we met that time, I'd started to call out to God, asking for answers, and then we met up and you just told me all that stuff." And of course, she wasn't actually talking to her at all. But nevertheless, God used the whole situation to bring this girl in. And the reason I'm saying that is she's a single mum without a lot of money, in a normal situation, doing her best, and yet almost by accident, in her books, God used her to see someone else born again. And if he can use her, he can use us. And so, and don't worry, I'm not going to set loads of homework or anything like that. It's just, okay, I've got to learn to trust. Now, did you have a look at 1 Corinthians? Did you find that one? Let's just read this passage here, if it makes any sense. Let's read quite a stretch, actually. I want to read from chapter 1, verse 18, because it's really cool. Okay, the message of the cross is foolish to those who are headed for destruction. But we who are being saved know it's the very power of God. Now, what's the power of God in those verses? The message. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm not ashamed of the good news about Jesus, because it is the power. So where's the power? You're right, but it's the message. The power, if you like, it's the story that is told. The power is in the message. And that's what it says here. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are headed for destruction. But we who are being saved know it is the very power of God. Now, you know me enough now that I'm not here to hurt or expose. But do we know that's the power of God? How much faith have I got that if I start talking to someone about the cross of Jesus, that the power of God is being released? Or do I avoid getting too controversial and don't want to talk about it because, you know, there's kind of blood and guts and it wasn't very nice and it's got political implications, and so I'd rather talk about loving one another. And of course, there's a place for that. That's right and proper. But loving one another is not the gospel. The power is in the message. And if you want to doze off now because you had a long day and the rest of it, before you doze off, could you just remember this? The power is in the message. It's not about you or me. It's about the message. And as this unpacks, we'll see that. The power is in the message. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are headed for destruction. But we who are being saved know it's the very power of God. As the scriptures say, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and discard the intelligence of the intelligent. So where does this leave the philosophers, the scholars, and the world's brilliant debaters? God has made the wisdom of this world look foolish, since God in his wisdom saw to it that the world would never know him through human wisdom. You, me, anyone else will never get to know God through human wisdom. He has chosen, well, why would he choose that? He's God. He's allowed to. So it's not about being clever. It's not about being smart. Is there an advantage to being clever and smart? I think there is. But it's not what gets you into the kingdom. God in his wisdom saw to it that the world would never know him through human wisdom. He has used our foolish preaching to save those who believe. Isn't that interesting? Now, Paul, I think in other translations, Paul says the foolishness of preaching. And what it comes down to is this. I want to read some more in a minute. And I know for some of us this makes our blood run cold, but we need to ask God to allow us to come into situations where we can share the message. Now, I'm talking about the good news, not the God's cross with you, wants to beat you in the head and really wishes you'd never been born, but he's got to put up with you now that you're here. But the good news, that nearly too good to be true news, which this passage will pull out in a minute. Because it's when we start to do that, that's where the power is. Now, I would suggest to you, most of the time, you won't feel power, you'll feel scared. But on occasions, we might do. But the power is in the message. And that message, let's just get, again, a story. And I forget the gentleman's name, but everyone here has heard of Billy Graham, yes? Okay, when he started traveling, he traveled with another man who would also preach. And some of you more learned people than me might know who he is. Sorry? No, he was the guy who did the singing. This chap would preach as well. And some years later, renounced the gospel. Said, actually, I never ever believed it. He said, I just did it. And people said, oh, that means the gospel's not true. Because thousands of people came to Christ through his preaching. Tremendously gifted orator, wrote many, many books as an atheist as to why there is no God. And they would say, it just shows the gospel is a sham. Or is the power in the message and not the preacher? You see, the power is in the message. It doesn't matter who gets up. I was much younger then, but I remember when Jesus of Nazareth was on telly with Robert Powell. Okay. I can't prove this one, but it's only anecdotal. But apparently, there's quite a famous scene where they do the camera and he sort of does his big eye thing and he looks into the camera and says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. People were turning up in church. Pastors' phones were ringing because of that one scene. Now, is Robert Powell this amazingly anointed man of God? No, I mean, I think he went on to act with Jasper Carrot in the stupid cop thing, didn't he? You know, which I thought was very funny. But my point is the power is in the message. As long as the message is delivered accurately, and in our case, I would suggest with love and with respect. But you see, if I start to believe that, the pressure starts to come off. And I think I have to put a caveat in here. I'm not talking about people standing in the city centre bellowing into a loud hailer or something with some kind of father issue. You need to come to Christ, the power! I don't believe that is what we're talking about. I think you muddy it and you confuse it. But quite simply, the power is in the message. Because the message is enough. And we want to add to that. What have I got to do? Well, you've got to believe. That's it. And once we come to that place of believing, the whole thing starts to roll. Again, perhaps hopefully this will take a bit more pressure off. Verse 22, they're talking about this message. It is foolish to the Jews who ask for a sign from heaven, and it is foolish to the Greeks, that would be us, who seek human wisdom. So you go back to when this was written, and you go up to a Jewish community, and they say, wait, show us a sign. Well, I haven't got very good at miracles yet. I've just got to tell you. Ha! Stupid. So you come over to the UK, and you talk to the people in Exeter, and you say, well, you've got to hear this message. And you start to tell them about Jesus and what he did on the cross. You see, I'm not sure about that. What you've got to understand is when you look at the human condition and how the human mind works and you bring the subconscious into it, it doesn't really make the same sense. What you need to realize is that where we have evolved, we have this reptilian tail in our brain, and then we develop this need for cutting on, it goes on and on and on. So the message is complete stupidity to the people who have a religious zeal for God, and it's complete stupidity to those who have a zeal for human wisdom. And therefore we're stuffed. Or is it is there another group of people. It's foolish to the Jews who ask for a sign from heaven, and it's foolish to the Greeks who seek human wisdom. So when we preach that Christ was crucified, the Jews are offended, and the Gentiles say it's all nonsense. I mean, if perhaps to bring it a bit more up to date, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but if you went to the local mosque and told them that Jesus is God, seeing as the Jews tend to be a lot friendlier these days, how would the Muslims feel about that? The average Muslim would be very offended by that. They wouldn't necessarily blow you up or anything. I mean, the vast majority of them are decent people. But they would be offended by it. And what if we had a chat with Professor Brian Cox about the gospel? How do you think he'd handle it? He would think we've lost the plot, wouldn't he? He's a preacher. He preaches the evolution gospel. Yes, here is the good news. You happened randomly. There is no point to your life. Soon you will cease to exist, and so will the universe, and it will all be over. Have a nice day. It's very. Let me just have an aside here. When we were watching this wonderful program by Mr. Cox on the BBC, we noted that he did an altar call. And now, you're talking to someone who's preached for 20-odd years. I know some of the mind games. And for those of you who've been around church for a while, you get towards the end of the message, and everyone's a little bit nervy, and maybe wants some people to become Christians or whatever, at which point the preacher will drop his voice slightly. And he will look over in the keyboard player, or pick up a minor key, and he will say, "Tonight, you are here. That's a point of destiny." Can you feel the atmosphere changing? All right, that's exactly what Brian Cox does. When he gets to his point, his voice drops, and they bring the music in, and he brings you into his deception. And it was very interesting that the BBC got a lot of complaints about the overuse of music because it hypnotizes people. Because if you listen to his words, if you switch off the music, if you could just listen with the text, he contradicts himself all the way through. Because he will explain on one hand, here's entropy, nothing can ever get better. Everything will always go from one level of disorder to another. Is that or is that not the law of entropy, second law of thermodynamics? Then he will tell us how we evolved. Sorry, hello? Has anyone noticed there's a contradiction there? Does evolution go down or go up in complexity? It goes up, it gets more complex if evolution was true. So it's just broken the law he's explained to us. But when you're sincere and you know how to use your tonality and you lean slightly into the camera and with that really good-looking smile and those perfect teeth, people go, whoa. And it's a religious game, just like the churches use. Oh, sorry, did I say that?